There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 752. Let's have a conversation about a corkboard from the Nerdist community, which we call the Nerdist Community Corkboard. This is from Nerdist listener Pete Johnson. He is a sound designer for web mobile video game company called Working Man Interactive. He says, we're about to put our first major independent release, Death State, and if you find it worth your while, we'd appreciate a shout-out. Here is your official shout-out. The game is a 16-bit style horror-themed roguelike bullet hell single-stick shooter. You can check it out at deathstategame.com. Next one. This is says, seeing as how... Didn't leave his name.
You didn't leave your name.
Seeing as how Chris is such a fan of Disneyland, I thought I'd let him know and others about our podcast, The Mad Chatters. My two friends and I release a weekly show in which we simply chat about the happenings at Disneyland and Walt Disney World. We discuss the latest news, current construction projects... Hello, Star Wars Land, it says. And our favorite and least favorite aspects of the parks. We create top five lists, share park trivia, dive into the park's history, sound off on some park pet peeves, and anything else you can think of in regard to Disney parks. Check it out on iTunes, madchatters.net. I really feel like Matt Myra needs to listen to that and or be on it, too. Because everything, as much as I know about Disneyland, Myra goes deeper. But just about Disneyland. Oh, hey-o! All right, this episode is Dirk Alborn and Bebop Gresta. They are in charge of Hyperloop. Now, there isn't a ton of specific information that I'm going to give you before. We're going to flesh it out in the podcast. But Hyperloop is basically, imagine like a pneumatic tube system that would be a form of mass transit so that you would be able to get, you know, for instance, from LA to San Francisco in maybe like 35 minutes. And it probably, I'm sure some of you may have heard of it. For the ones who haven't, you probably think, oh, well, this is crazy and how could this happen? And, you know, but you start talking to them and you start researching and it seems like, well, it is theoretically possible. And so really it's just a question of building up the infrastructure and how are they going to do that? But they're really cool, interesting guys. And I am way on board Team Hyperloop if it, I really want it to work out. You can check them out and hear more about it on their Twitter feeds. Just Dirk, at Just Dirk, or at Bebop G Gresta, which is B-I-B-O-P-G, and then Gresta, G-R-E-S-T-A. But they're super, super cool guys, and love to have more science and industry people on, rather than just, you know, doesn't have to be all entertainment people all the time. And now here's the Nerdist Podcast number 752, with Dirk Alborn and Bebop Gresta. Katie, Hyperloop the thing.
Now entering... Nerdist.com.
Well, you guys have something in common, right? Both did MTV.
A what?
You both did MTV.
Oh, what? When was that?
Yeah, in 95.
What did you do?
I did the first year of Camden Town MTV Italy, and then we moved to MTV Italy.
Oh,
and
that's
I
fantastic.
And I set up the MTV production, and I had my own show.
That's fantastic.
Well, at that time, yes.
Of course it was. MTV Italy. How
it was great.
How was MTV Italy?
It was the year that I was working there was great, the first 4 years. Now they just destroyed it. It's just not existing anymore. The MTV that we know...
Yeah. The MTV in America is a lot different now, too.
But it's really like... It was the only country profitable of all MTV Europe. It was Italy.
Not anymore.
No.
Didn't the Kardashians come out of MTV?
No.
No, they came out of E. The E channel. E channel's to blame.
A lot of trash came out from MTV. So I'm not particularly enthusiastic, but it was fun.
Oh,
did they give you the £500 to spend in dresses and?
Oh, I don't even know if it was that much. Like it was.
You were in UK, right?
No, in America.
Oh no, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Did you do badly here? To us, they were giving us money to spend in dresses, and we've had the stylist. And
no, we had I had a one wardrobe person and no wardrobe budget. It was if you were to look back. The clothes that I was wearing on MTV were not only hilarious for the 90s, but really also just shitty. It just weren't. It was all the. In America in the mid 90s, the aesthetic was gas station attendant. So it was a lot of these big gas station shirts with fucking chain wallets and giant boots and clothes that were too big.
A lot of bad stuff. Good times.
It was dreadful. It was dreadful.
It'll all come back someday.
I know, it'll be retro.
I remember it. I was four, so.
Where did you grow up?
Huh?
Where did you grow up?
Where?
Yeah.
In Italy.
But which part?
Near Florence.
Oh, nice. E io parlo italiano.
Veramente?
Un po'.
No, paesano.
La famiglia è italiana.
True.
Yeah.
He speaks Italian too.
Ah. It's not, you know.
He can do it in Italian.
Yeah, I lived 15 years in Milan, so.
Oh, wow. I have to, praticare? I have to practice?
You have to praticare un pochino.
But because it's been molto tempo. But ho studiato a scuola per 4 anni.
Wow, sì. Your Italian is...
Così. But we can't do the entire podcast in
Italian. That's
No, no, the opposite.
No. And I can translate it in English. That would be awesome.
So nobody understands.
You know, what's so funny is that when I've traveled around Italy, it's so colloquial in the different regions. You'll go to one part and they say, no, we say it this way. And you go to another region and go, no, we say it this way.
Right.
So it's
like food. It's a religion to us, you know.
Yeah.
If you ask what is the matriciana, they answer in 10 different ways depending on where you are in the region. It's okay.
I do my best to speak, though, because I know that I want to try to set a good example for America when I go over. Like, I'm going to try to speak your language. We just went to Austria, and I really tried to get as much basic German as possible, but it was bad.
That's what I usually try to do with him, speaking German, but he doesn't understand.
Yeah, he believes he speaks French.
Oh my God, I speak fluent French.
So we went to Paris. No,
they were understanding me and also giving me compliments.
Yeah.
You're jealous. I don't ever criticize your Spanish.
We just came back from China.
Yeah.
And he literally, like, I told him, shut up, because he was, like, just repeating what our translator was telling the taxi driver. And the taxi driver was, like, completely confusing. Nervous. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah.
That was serious. I was repeating.
Like, we were lost. And the taxi driver, they were discussing where it was. And he was just like.
So how do you say, are you from Germany?
I was born in Berlin, yeah.
You were born in Berlin. So what is the colloquial way to say nice to meet you? Because I was doing a very little, like, schon sie zu treffen. Like, is that not...
Yeah, that's
this
okay.
This is a bad word.
What?
No. What does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of saying it.
What's a very casual way to say it's nice to meet you?
Hello?
Wait a minute. I don't think I can get that one down.
It depends if you're, like, if you're formal or if you're friendly.
Sure.
But it's just but basically I would probably say freut mich sie kennenzulernen oder dich kennenzulernen.
Nice. Okay. I'll play with that. I'll try. I'm trying. Well, you know, when you live in Europe, you it's so cross-cultural. You I think you're sort of in order to live, you have to communicate in 5 different languages because everyone. But here, you know, we're landlocked. And so we just
Wait. I mean, if you know a little bit of Spanish in LA.
Yes. I'm of course, that's what... You know, it's funny to me when I went to Austria and I thought, oh, you know, I'm just going to learn German because why not? And I was like, but I probably should focus more on Spanish. That'll probably apply. That'll probably be better for me in my daily life in America.
Definitely.
But I'm very excited to have you both on because... the Hyperloop is such an interesting and wild, and it seems like actually achievable idea.
that, you know, I wanted to hear more about it and hear what you guys are, where you're at and what some of the challenges are. I mean, you know, from my understanding, based on what I've heard Elon Musk say before, is essentially like a pneumatic tube system, basically, or no, not the same.
It's not really. So imagine a train, right? When you have a train and the train goes really fast, there comes a point where the air gets as thick as water.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a limit. You can't really go much faster. So if you would now take that train and put it into a tube and basically take the air out almost completely, so you would create a low-pressure environment.
So there's no resistance.
Yeah, so now the train can go much, much faster. So it's basically that simple. And now our job is to make it economical, to make it, you know, to make it actually something that you can pay for.
Sure.
I mean, that makes sense. It has a business model behind it. But from a technological point of view, it's very simple.
What about the logistical issues? I mean, how do you get all of the – is it a statewide initiative, or do you have to – work with municipalities all along the I-5 freeway? Do you have to go to Gorman and be like, we want to put a tube system through here? You guys are going to have to be okay with that.
Well, I mean, it's, it's a little bit more complicated than that. In our case, America is very complicated in general. Mm-hmm. Right now we have private property. We're actually starting to build next year the first 5-mile track.
Okay.
That's happening in California. That's happening it's called Quay Valley. It's Kings County, right next to the I-5. So next time you drive up to San Francisco, you see it on the site.
Okay.
And that's private property, so that's fairly easy. But if you want to connect Los Angeles to San Francisco, for example, you have to deal with a lot of municipal, offices. You have to deal with Caltrans, for example. It's not that easy. So we are actually we're a global company. We're actually more than a company. We're actually a movement. So our story is much more than just, hey, these guys want to build technology, because it's not really us. It's there's just a lot of people that are joining forces, that are coming together from all areas and, with amazing backgrounds, if it's bebop or guys that have built. We have people on the team that have been part of the Mars rover, of the Manhattan Project,
mm-hmm.
that have invented the insulin pump and all over the world. So we have team members in China. We have team members in Japan. We have team members in France. We really, it's becoming a real movement, which is exciting. And it's a unique story, because everybody is kind of like coming together. Our core team is 420 people.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's working in exchange for stock options. So they're all basically co-founders of the company.
Yeah, if it works, those are going to be very valuable, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple of people that are going to become millionaires, for sure. But we have, we even have very large companies as part of the team. So we have AECOM, which is the largest construction engineering firm in the world, that's part of the team and working in exchange for stock options. We have another company called Oerlikon, which is the inventor of the vacuum pump.
Mm-hmm.
And they're part of the team working for stock options and a lot of others. So it's becoming a global movement, and that's a really exciting part.
It is. I mean, the idea of have there been any great leaps in transportation in the past 50 years? I mean, it seems like we're still, the jet age is still the jets. I mean, like they might be able to make minor improvements here and there, but ultimately the technology hasn't really, there's no like Moore's law of transportation.
Hell no. I mean, they're still using the same screws and cast iron nails that the Chinese workers used when they put down the tracks. Mm-hmm. So dinosaurs are, it's not only because they're big as a train, but they also,
But there's also an aspect of that. You know, if you see all the rails in the world, the width of the two rails, it's 4.8 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And this size was decided because of the Roman chariot. So the Roman chariot, that's how they built the road.
Right.
And if you think about it, one of the most advanced transportation systems that we have right now, so the high-speed rail, came out from the butt of two horses. That's crazy, right?
That is really crazy, and it's pretty much stayed that the entire time.
I mean, if you look at even the maglev system,
right?
That was actually developed in the 1930s.
The magnetic trains.
Yeah. So in Germany in 1930, the first test track was done in the 1970s in Germany. So, I mean, we live in 2015. I just saw a flying, like, robotic butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
We can do much better than, you know.
So if Hyperloop doesn't work, then we get giant robotic butterflies that can just take us up to San Francisco?
Into it. Oh, way on board.
I mean, the prospect of traveling, even just from Southern and Northern California in 35 minutes. Of course, I don't know if San Francisco would appreciate the infusion of Los Angelinos.
No, they would, because they could move. People could work in San Francisco and move the fuck out of San Francisco.
Of course.
Like, no one wants to live there with those prices. They can move anywhere along that strip.
If there,
it's 20 minutes to work.
But does it operate the same way that a train does? Are there stops along the way, or is it a straight shot all the way? Does it have to?
So the main, I mean, it's really about connecting two metropolitan areas.
Mm-hmm.
It also works as a local transportation system, but if you have stops, you lose the speed, right?
Sure.
So you lose time. You would rather have an additional tube that maybe goes from one point to another point in the middle, for example.
So to give you some numbers, we are able to transport 28 people each capsule,
mm-hmm.
and we're able to depart one capsule every 30 seconds. It means 3,200 passengers an hour, means 67,000 people a day, means 24 million people a year.
Wow.
We can substitute the entire flight industry from Los Angeles to San Francisco four times.
Oh my God.
With one tube. So if you do some stops, we over-engineered our pylons. So you can put more than one tube on each pylon.
Right.
So you can imagine to do other stops if, of course, the density of population and the necessity will require it. So we have no limits on what this system can do. To the actual transportation system.
It would take me less time to work in San Francisco to get there than it does for me to get to the valley from here.
Yes, yes.
Like, I'm just, it's...
I would take a Hyperloop just to Santa Monica. Like, I would honestly, if I could get to Santa Monica in five minutes.
On the weekend, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I would do it.
Actually, we are trying to solve the entire problem, because if we solve the problem to move one person to point A to point B, at the speed of sound, and then you take 2 hours to go to the station, we haven't solved anything, right?
Right.
So we are thinking the system in a way that it's able to allow you to push a button, and then a taxi, an Uber, or a self-driving car picks you up,
mm-hmm.
brings you to the local Hyperloop station. The local Hyperloop station departs you to the main station. The main station brings you to destination. Everything in 50 minutes.
Wow.
And now we are redefining completely how we see transportation between cities and inside cities.
Wow.
I mean, it's not only that. I don't know. You travel probably a lot, mm-hmm. right? Doesn't it suck?
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, because it's not even... Last year I was doing a comedy tour, and this comedian named Louis C.K. was on the tour, and Louis had a private jet that he was using on the tour. So he had a private jet from Atlanta to New York, and he said to some of the comedians, hey, do you want to hop on the jet and fly to New York? And we said, well, fuck, yeah, of course. We flew on a Citation 10, which is very fast. I think maybe the fastest jet that you can get on as a civilian. And we were Atlanta to New York in 2.5 hours, and no one was tired. And then I realized, oh, it's not the actual traveling part. It's all the shit that goes around the traveling part.
Definitely.
That is completely exhausting. And so, you know, if you could eliminate that, not only is that more efficient, but also it's more human energy efficient.
Well, that's why I drive to Las Vegas. I'm like, well, I can get in the car and get there in 4 hours. I don't have to drive to LAX, get through security at LAX, land at McCarran, wait in the giant taxi line. Really, I'm probably costing myself an hour of time, but mentally it's just like, I get in, I drive, I get to the hotel.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah, that's why we are rethinking about everything. The passenger experience has to change. What we are experiencing right now is broken. Come on, we go to the airport, there's these giant lines, and then you're just entering in this, like, a no like a bubble where after the check-in, you're basically a prisoner. And
yeah.
You feel like this is, you know, this is broken. We will fix it.
I mean, I don't think it takes a genius to redesign those things, right? I mean, every time I'm there, I feel like a beast, right? It's like an animal, like
just you're being herded
here. It's insane.
Well, also, I mean,
unhuman.
The bureaucracy of, I mean, I think change is difficult in large organizations, particularly organizations that are regulated by the government that have a large bureaucracy and things. You know, even changing those screws, I'm guessing, is probably cost a shit ton of money and takes a long time through a decision making process.
But it used to be better,
right?
I mean, traveling used to be an experience, right? It used to be something you looked forward to. Now traveling is like the last thing I really want to do. Like being in the other city, yes, but like the travel experience in itself, no. And if you look at really the technology we have we're using every single day, I mean, we have to do actually with a lot of national security labs.
Sure.
Right? And the technology that these guys, that the government has and is using for surveillance, is using for, I mean, they can do much, much better than the guys that are eating McDonald's and are looking at your luggage and have you pull your pen out. I mean, it's, but there's even, you know, when you travel a lot, you know, you get to better airports and you're like, hey, wait a second, why is this working? You know, and then you come back to LAX, for example, and you're like, no, it can't be.
You know, LAX did something very, very sneaky, which is, if you come into the Bradley terminal, the international terminal, it's gorgeous. Because I think they want people from other countries to think, our airport's awesome. Then when you're flying domestic, LAX is the worst airport in the United States. It is a legitimate disaster.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they've changed LAX since they built LAX. There's no way to get
in the midst of it right now. The never-ending construction process is going on.
Maybe they're making headway, but I've just basically seen the same boarded-up walls for the last few years and very little progress.
Just hoping that Terminal 3 Skybridge gets reopened soon, guys.
Oh, God.
I have a very bad news for people that are traveling in there. The security system that seems really secure is not secure at all. So it's all what you see in the airport.
Yeah.
Actually, it's breakable, and you know there's several videos online that can show you how to do it. This is
I don't want to know. I travel too much. I just like to go. Well, I'm hopefully it's fine. Right. I got to travel, and I don't have a choice.
It's not, unfortunately.
Damn it!
But I mean, there's so many things, right? I mean, you know where you got to go. The airline knows where you have to go. Your phone knows where you have to go, but your luggage. Right. It's just, I mean, when I arrive, I remember we were coming back from Dubai. Yeah. So it was 15-hour flight and we were standing there and I was waiting 40 minutes for my luggage just to figure out that before I arrived, someone decided to take my luggage off the band and it was standing somewhere else in the corner. I mean, those things can be solved super easily with technology that you know. Was your luggage actually lost? Is it already arrived? I mean, there's barcodes if you want to make it low tech, but even higher tech. We have all those solutions. It's just about, you know, saying, hey, we want to make it again an experience. So that's besides traveling super fast and in a green mode, because that's one of the most important things for the Hyperloop. You know, we are also trying to really work on it. And we know that airlines, airports, train operators, they're talking to us because they have the same interest, but they might not have the startup mentality, you know, and so we're working together to try to solve those issues.
Yeah. Is the technology there yet? Is it, I mean, do you have it or is it you're close?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Hyperloop or are you talking about the BAX?
The Hyperloop.
Yeah, Hyperloop, I mean, the technology is not the problem. The technology is 20% of what really has to happen in order to see Hyperloops everywhere. As I explained earlier, you have really, when we talk about the Hyperloop, we know how to levitate trains. We know how to move them forward. We know how to build tubes and we know how to evacuate them. So the company that's part of our team, they built a CERN Hydrogen Collider.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's very similar, and it's in a complete vacuum. So our system is actually much, much easier. The technology is really not a problem.
Yeah. When we're talking about efficiency, it's not about, you know, only being green or being hippie, saving the world. We like that. But the immediate consequences of what we are doing is that the system is able to generate more electricity that we consume. Mm-hmm. So actually, if you do a comparison with any other system, for example, high-speed rail, we are also profitable. And high-speed rail is not. All these guys are people subsidized by the state. Right. There's no one project in the world that it's profitable right now. Wow.
But not only high-speed rail. I mean, just take that, the metro in LA. For each passenger, you pay $12.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What, as a taxpayer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's subsidized with $12 per person.
Know that.
Yeah,
I'm not even riding the metro.
I know. Well, you pay.
I mean, you get to sit in that traffic on Wilshire while they try to build it. That's a lot of fun. Yeah, that's something for you.
Well, they keep having to scoop out all the tar that's leaking from the tar pits.
That building the stop 40 feet from the tar pit is not a great idea?
Maybe it's not a great idea.
Wait, are you saying, but this is all seeping in. Can't we just use this?
Well, you know, also in a town that's seismically stable.
It's going to take 7 more years than I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it? But you know, being in a vacuum. I mean, how psychologically equipped are people to travel in a vacuum in a tube? Do you think that's for everyone?
Well, we're not really in a vacuum, right? It's a low pressure environment. It's actually very similar to an airplane. I mean, you're in high altitudes, right? There's a very low air pressure. It's not that when they would open the door at those high altitudes, you would feel that well. it's basically exactly the same thing, but it's way safer than on an airplane.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course.
But even if there's a slight deviation, that's still you're able to monitor.
We're like 10 times safer than an airplane.
Yes.
How so?
An airplane has a coefficient of 0.07 in the let's say safe parameters, means you expect to break, to have an accident every 3.7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not acceptable for us. Our system is based on technology that actually monitor inside and outside in real time. Our capsules are like ants, communicates one with each other and can monitor and scan what happens inside the tube. Imagine that if we have some failure in the engine, we just stop. If an airplane has a failure, you just die.
Right, of course. Well, what about if the tube, what about if there's, you know, a geological
tube
deviation?
Tube misalignment are, if they are exceeding a certain parameter, the system will stop. But we have a compensation system that are made basically on the fact that we are built on pylons. Pylons are one of the most resistant structure for earthquakes, for example. We've seen over and over pipelines built in several parts of the world resisting earthquakes up to 8.5 Richter scale.
Right.
And these are only the beginning of what we are doing, because we are applying the most advanced technologies in terms of building. But imagine that for us, safety is applied to every single component of the Hyperloop. At the end of the day, also, safety, it's very important, but we also analyzed all the comfort. People are worried about, you know, do I feel claustrophobic inside the capsule? There's no windows. But human eye sees at 120K, okay, as a definition of pixel.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, above 15K, we already cannot distinguish reality. So what we did, we put screens all over the capsule at 15K and above to basically allow people to feel like they are watching outside.
Looking outside, yeah.
But the funny thing, our in-capsule entertainment team is developing the entertainment system that allow you to basically experience the travel that you are actually doing, or the travel that you wish to do, or the travel that you are doing in the future or in the past.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a complete new experience. And inside the capsule, you can be active or passive. If you're active, actually, and you are skilled in something, maybe there's someone else that thinks that these skills can be paid. And you're not anymore paying for the travel. You get paid to be in the Hyperloop.
Oh, so cool.
We are redefining completely the user experience inside our capsule.
So you would have to. So if you're connecting Los Angeles and San Francisco, you would have to build two tubes, I imagine, right?
Correct.
Right, for going and coming.
I mean, you don't have to, but you want to have because of capacity issues.
Right. Right. And then is the plan to go directly into San Francisco, just like right in the middle of San Francisco, from the middle of Los Angeles?
I mean, that's one of the advantages of a train, towards an airplane. And normally airports are outside because you have the airports coming in, you have security issues with the landing and the departures. Trains can arrive directly into the center. So that's one of the large advantages.
Yeah. But we hope that will be the first Hyperloop, but we don't want to disappoint anyone. We don't think this will be the first route that we will be completing. America, it's a very complicated country. We hope. Maybe there's a change of regulation or something.
So why try it in America if we're so complicated? Why not go someplace where
you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, Chris.
Well, we're building the first full-scale version right now in America on private property,
mm-hmm.
right? And we start out as an American company, even so we are more like a global movement. But, I mean, there's a whole world, and we're a company. So if, obviously, it takes a high-speed rail right now 20 or 30 years to build a project, if it happens.
Wow.
And you always have lawsuits and all these issues and people that are trying to make money of it. If you go in other countries we have real problems. There are cities out there. If you go to Beijing, you don't see the sky. Right, there's 30 million people living there. They don't know where to put them. So imagine if you can build another city 100 kilometers away, and all those people are within 10 minutes, they can be inside Beijing.
I mean, it's really nicer. Like standing on the precipice of, we're going to put these freeways, and then you're going to have a car, and you don't have to live. It's just like a mass. Solution to that, in a similar way.
It's something that we have to do. Because it's, I don't know. Come on, how often do you stand in LA traffic, for example?
Oh yeah, it's the worst. But you know what's interesting is that if you as cramped as a lot of American cities can feel, when you travel across the United States, you realize that there is actually vast space. There's a large plots of land with nothing on them for hundreds of miles.
Right.
So it is, I mean, I do see it as being a theoretical solution to being able to get people working in cities, but then, living.
It's a practical solution. I mean, in India, they're planning several satellite cities outside of the larger metropolitan areas, and they're planning those future cities. In America, we don't have that big of a problem yet. And when you talk about cities that have 30 million, 50 million people, that's a real problem, right?
Yeah.
So, and those countries that don't really have any infrastructure developed, I mean, building infrastructure that continues to cost you money is, doesn't make sense. And going and build something in China that pollutes even more doesn't make sense, as an example, right? You already don't see the sky. We need to do something green. So it's about how we can change our life, how we can... I mean, if you go back and you go and read Popular Science from 1969, the Minister of Transportation of the U.S. government said that tube travel is one of the most important things for America in 1969. They financed two projects that actually did prototypes for tube travel.
Isn't there... tube travel that goes back to the 19th century? Didn't they try? Yeah,
yes.
They did like some sort of a high pressure,
yeah,
low pressure rail system.
Well, in reality,
a pneumatic rail system. That, like, there was a giant, like the high pressure air pushing. I mean, I know it's a slightly different principle than what you're.
No. In reality, the initial project was 1870, mm-hmm. and was supposed to connect New York to San Francisco between Warren and Broadway. The first mile was digged. Mm-hmm. And it was a train in a vacuum, basically. The Pennsylvania Vacuum Beach Company was called. It lasted 2 years and then it bankrupt, but the concept was there. And in 1904, Robert Goddard, a very famous inventor, patented a solution that was very similar to the hyperloop. So it started in the 18th century.
Wow. So what's the big problem now? Is it really just all the bureaucracy? Is that the last hurdle?
To be honest, I don't think there are any big problems. It's just about moving forward.
Sure.
So everything that we have ahead of us are things that can be solved fairly easy. So
how far are we away?
Well, construction starts next year. So,
36 months.
Oh, wow. That's not bad, actually.
It's not bad.
Well, we're a private company, so we need to move fast.
Yeah. How did you guys get involved? Did Elon call
no,
you?
No, so Elon is not involved at all.
He's right? not involved at all.
He came out with a concept and basically said, hey, it would be really cool if someone would do this. I'm busy with Tesla and SpaceX. So here it is. At that time, we reached out. We just had launched a website called Jumpstart Fund. That uses crowdsourcing to make technologies and ideas into successful companies. So it mm-hmm. builds communities. And so we reached out, saw it as a great project to put on the site, did it. The community was, going crazy about it. They really want, rather than just saying, hey, you guys should do it, they actually said, I want to be part of this. So we created the company. We said, everybody who would like to work on it in exchange for stock options, please apply. We had more than 200 applications, got a team together of 100 people that put in a minimum of 10 hours a week. And that's how it started. Now we have 420 plus several very large companies.
Wow. Do you have scale versions that you've been playing with?
We have done basically all the different components have been prototyped, mm-hmm. Some of them are difficult to scale. So you have to do it component-wise, and then now, obviously, we're going to be optimizing in Quay Valley right after construction.
Is there going to be a tiny Disneyland version of the Hyperloop?
Well,
the kids on?
No, it would be a full scale. We would be able to transport 10 million people. So the only problem is that we cannot reach the 760 miles per hour, but except for the speed.
It's too short of a track.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
How long does it – how fast does it accelerate? What do you need to
1G.
Okay.
Yeah.
1G is 1G is we have 1G in acceleration and deceleration, 0.5G lateral, which is very comfortable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you put yourself in any? Have you done tests yourself to see what it would feel like?
I'm sure your car does more than 1G.
Your car does more than 1G.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
You have a Jaguar.
All right.
You have a Type R Jaguar.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Go hit some Gs. Although not in Los Angeles. You don't do any Gs in Los Angeles because you're just constantly stopping and starting. This is why we need a Hyperloop. Right. Honestly, I would – if I had an – it's – having your own space in your car is nice. But honestly, if I had a better option – so our public transportation systems, L.A. is once again not fantastic in terms of public transportation. I go to other cities and I know that they're built around their public transportation and here it's a mess.
But it used to be much better.
Patchwork.
Did you know that?
It used to be great.
It used to be awesome, and then Ford came.
And they got rid of the red car
and said, "Hey, we need to sell some cars. Let's tore everything out." And
it was
throw it
the
away.
Most advanced rail system in the planet, America, and. Someone decided that it wasn't
wasn't profitable
for them.
I mean, Los Angeles, there were a lot of streetcars, and if you look at old pictures,
even if you look at a lot of the old alleyways, look, Pacific Rail Car,
Santa Monica Boulevard,
yep.
Right? There was.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit explained that. That guy was just trying to build the freeway system for all the cartoons.
Exactly what happened.
When do you think once you start building, you will be able for? To start, human testing, for lack of a better word, when would you actually start being able to put...
2018.
That's wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's when the testing's over, but we open up to the public. So 2018-19,
I can hop on and ride 5 miles?
You guys going to be there at the first ride, so when we open it up.
And then beyond that, what do you foresee for the future?
Well, right now we have more than 20 city pairs that are interested in having a first full-length Hyperloop. But we need to do Quay Valley first. We need to optimize the boarding procedures, the capsule handling, all these things. And right around that time, probably a little bit earlier, we will be starting the next construction of the first full-lengths. Probably, I mean, right now we have interest in America, in Europe, and other countries. As I said earlier, America and Europe are more complicated, so it would take 20, 30 years. So it's much more likely to see the first full-length Hyperloop done in Asia, the Middle East, Africa, India.
Indonesia.
Sure. But this is something that we hopefully will see in our lifetimes.
No, definitely. I mean, once it's up, it's going to go very, very fast. Because if you can imagine, everybody wants high-speed rail right now all over the world. But it's cost money. Now, our system makes money after 8 years.
Oh, wow.
So you recover all your money within 8 years. It's not about spending $20 billion if you get them back and if you even continue making money. So if you build a green transport system that starts making money, everybody wants it, and everybody will want it very fast.
What's the price? What are you envisioning the price point to be for an average passenger to travel?
So LA to San Francisco is around $30.
Oh, my God.
And but we're actually looking at other alternatives in order to monetize on the passenger. Because a ticket is very much $1,800, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can do much better than a ticket. So if you think of it's actually a very low ticket price. And if we can find a way that we can make more money the more the passenger rides. Now, having a ticket has actually a negative impact. So being able to make more money, you know, just like, I don't know, when I was a kid, video games, I had to pay for them. They were super expensive. Today they're free and the video game companies are making way more money than before. Or if you look at Facebook and Google, the large infrastructures that you're getting for free and they're super profitable. I mean, we have your time, if you do LA to San Francisco, for 40 minutes.
Right.
It's one thing, right? We know where you come from. We know who you are. We know where you go to. I mean, there's a lot of new business models that you can build around that. So that at least in off-peak times, you don't need to pay. Right?
That's crazy.
As IoT becomes more of a thing, you know, you're really going to know literally everything about me as I walk out the door.
Exactly.
My shoes are connected to the internet. My watch is connected to the internet. My toaster toasted when I woke up because it knew when I was getting up.
Hooray!
And I get on the Hyperloop. It's like, hey, how was that toast, buddy?
Get out of my head. Yeah, I mean,
I use some orange juice, huh? Well, yeah. It's $1.50.
You have to imagine that we are designing also different kind of capsules. There's first class, second class, freight. Or special purpose. For example, we can allow companies to request the special capsules.
He wants a party capsule.
I want the bebop capsule.
Can you stand up in a capsule once it's moving?
Of course.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, you can die. No, no. Yeah, you can just like an airplane.
It's like an airplane.
Yeah.
So you're not. It's not like a tiny car that you're strapped in.
No, absolutely.
It's not the Matterhorn.
No,
I don't know.
But imagine.
Matterhorn's terrible, by the way. Matterhorn is my least favorite Disneyland ride. I get injured every time
it's
I'm
the
on
back breaker.
The Matterhorn. Yeah, the jerking and the you know, everything else is great with that.
But
you know,
imagine, for example, Disney can request a capsule for kids. Cisco wants a capsule for their manager to be able to communicate.
Private capsules.
Exactly. Yeah. Or medical. For example, you know, you need to transport, you know, people that is injured or organs. So we have, literally, we can disrupt all the industries in transportation.
So you're talking to airlines, for example, right? They want to really control the experience as well. I mean, they're trying to make the experience better, right? Mm. So once it's better, they're also trying to control it. And part of that might be having their personalized Hyperloop capsule for their passengers, which then connects you to the airport and gets you to your flight.
I mean, I would imagine that getting a personalized capsule is probably a lot less expensive than getting a private jet.
Absolutely.
Because you're not really, because there's no fuel to pay for. It's just air. It's just air.
In average, capsule costs from $2 million to $2.5 million.
Right. But operational costs are very low.
Much less than a jet.
Much less than a jet.
And it costs $400,000 to $1 million to have a private jet every year. So I think this is the way to go, guys.
You know, the ones that are actually crazy expensive are boats, like yachts.
Right.
Yeah, you got to pay a crew.
Yeah,
to
yachts
stay
are like $80 million.
You
got to
have a pirate contingency plan.
I mean, what?
But you have bikinis on a boat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, bikini hyper.
It might be really worth it.
Is it? So, what do you think because obviously there's going to be some type of. With this kind of a paradigm shift, there's going to be some butterfly effect that's going to obviously affect every other form of transportation. Like, what do you envision happening? Do you envision airlines forcing to, you know, will airlines start to go out of business because they have to drop prices to compete with the loop? Or
I mean, first of all, I don't think they're going to go out of business. It's but they are going to be specializing on long distance. Short distance might not make sense anymore.
Sure.
Long distance still is going to be a business model. And I mean, there's always going to be someone that's going to be out of business because they're not smart enough to get the shift. I don't think that it's because of us, but it's just a market shift. Millennials today don't want to pay for anything anymore.
Right.
Right. So if
they really don't.
Yeah. But so you need to get smarter. You need to find better business models that work much better. And we know by effect that certain airlines are looking at the same things we're looking at because they're asking us. They're consulting with us. They want to work together with us. So, and it's not only airlines. I mean, there's a whole move. But obviously, they're very large companies. They're very slow a lot of the times. I mean, our hope is that we move towards a greener transportation system because that's really what we need.
Well, yes, especially as, you know, as fuel prices go up and as fossil fuels
go down,
go
bro.
Away.
They're going down, bro. $50 a barrel. What?
For now. But, you know, for aircraft, I mean, it's, you know, how much?
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah, well, I think it's just like they have to, like, the fuel costs rise. They have to squeeze in more seats. They have to make it more uncomfortable for the passenger.
I don't fit anymore.
You're tall.
It's almost impossible for me to sit. Anyways, every single time we travel, and we travel a lot, we're always standing there and like, this has to stop. This has to be – there has to be a better solution.
It's good that you guys
this.
Will never lose motivation because you'll always be traveling.
Oh, yeah. For sure. We're visiting another 14 countries in another month and a half.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we are in a world tour. And, you know, the basic idea is to promote and to let the people know.
So if everybody wants to sponsor our business class, please let us know.
Yes, please. But the amazing thing is the overwhelming response of the people worldwide. It's unbelievable what's happening right now. We are like treated like rock stars, and you know they love the concept. They want it happen, and actually, we are meeting president of states, you know, Ministry of Transportation. It's getting really serious discussion.
So, what do you do when you sit down with someone and they go, "What? That's crazy! You can't do that. That you can't build a tube system all over the. What do you mean? You're nuts! It'll never work."
Normally, we smile.
And then we do it in the Italian way. They disappear.
No, but we had that happen actually a lot of times.
Yeah.
So you have especially like, you know, specialists from railway and so on. So first they say, we just had one of those cases actually in China. So they came to visit us and it was all about like, no, that's not possible. And then when we came there, actually we got an email, let's have a meeting, a separate meeting before. And one of the guys was like, okay, I'm going to work with you and we're going to do all the thing. And then the whole rest of the crew was like, okay, so let's work together and make this together happening. Mm-hmm. So they're first they're saying no, no, no. But then at the end, it's always we want to be part of this and we want to help you guys make this happen.
Well, can you just give me a real quick explanation of, you know, for in layman's terms, exactly how the technology works and how you guys are laying it out.
Sure. So you imagine a capsule, mm-hmm. right, that's hovering inside a tube. And it's moving really, really fast inside the tube. Basically, you create a low-pressure environment. So you reduce the air inside the tube. So that's a capsule similar to an airplane that goes into high altitudes.
Yes.
Encounters very little resistance and therefore can go very fast with very little energy. Then we use alternative energy, so solar, wind, regenerative braking, kinetic energy to produce more energy than we are using.
Oh, wow. And that's it. That's literally it. Yeah.
That's it.
And do you plan on do you think it's important to build like a futuristic, fancy – I mean, because this is a very futuristic idea. And just in turn, I mean, I know the technology is not, but I think people will see it as like, oh, it's a futuristic idea. Do you feel like the aesthetic has to match what people would expect this kind of thing to be?
I think it's actually almost the opposite.
Really?
Because if you, you know, if there's an 80-year-old woman, you know, and she hears, oh, crazy, you get in a tube and it's so super fast. Like, you actually want to assure her and make sure that she feels safe.
Right.
Right. So it has to be something that fits for a 2-year-old as much as for an 80-year-old. So it's, but that doesn't mean that it should be lame, but it should be something that, you know, like a modern aircraft, like something you would, but still expect, like a modern train.
Yeah.
And not something where you're like strapped in into like a weird seat and you have never seen and some strange screens. So psychology, I think, is very important.
That's good. And if you hate the other people who are in your capsule, you're only in it for 30 minutes. So what's so you don't right. have to deal with them for long.
Well, knowing the passenger before, you can also, you know, work on the data and you, create
that's,
new.
That's an upsell, right? If you right. pay $100 per ride, you get to choose one of the models that might be traveling with you.
Oh, interesting!
Interesting. Right?
Or you can just buy out the whole capsule. Right. And then not
what's
have
the to... like long term? You know, 75 years from now, when this thing is built completely and it's over the entire country.
It would be faster than this.
Great, great. Let's chop it down to 40 years, we'll say. 30, whatever just you want to say. Oh, 10 years. In 10 years, how long is it going to take me to get in the Hyperloop and get to New York from Los Angeles?
Well, we're not really long distance, right? So it's more like a metro system.
Mm-hmm.
So you would probably, in order, I don't remember the map right now, but you would probably go to Vegas, and then from Vegas you move over. You know, so you change a couple of times.
Yep.
You know, but it's still depending on how long you stop in Vegas.
Yeah. And also you have to check how the air industry will evolve, because mm-hmm. if they finally will do the ultrasonic flight, then our role will be basically, you know, more a metro system. If these guys doesn't move
yeah.
fast enough, we can head to expand into like larger
yeah.
chunk of, you know, land.
Your move, airlines.
Move.
So where can people get more information about the Hyperloop?
Well, they can come to hyperloop.global.
Mm-hmm.
That's the domain we're using, or they can go to www.jumpstartfund.com, and there's a project. They can apply to be part of the team. They can be part of the discussions, and we're actually going to be putting several tasks live very, very soon, so they yeah. can actually be participating.
We are searching for a lot of talent out there. If you are an engineer, a social media manager, marketing manager, people that wants to change the world and they are powered by passion, yep. like our team, please apply.
I guarantee you someone listening just heard that and they're in a job that they hate and they just went, oh my God, I have to apply for this. This is exactly what I've been waiting for.
But that's exactly how most of the people that we have are, you know, they want to be part of something that changes the world, that they can be proud of. And everybody, I mean, you know, even Ben who brought us here, he is part of the team. So he's working for his stock options. And
Andrea,
you know, we all, it's the same for us. So, and I think that's what makes this project so exciting, that it's more than just a normal company. It's really a movement. And it's driven by passion and people that want to see a change. And because of that, because we have so many talented people, we are able to look at much more than just the levitation technology, but really trying to solve all those problems and issues and come up with something a little bit more fun and engaging. And hopefully, you know, in 10 years, you know, what I want is that it's again fun to travel, that it's not about getting to the destination, but it's actually, you know,
the journey. Excellent. Thank you so much for being here. This was really, really fascinating, and I hope it works out. I really hope that you're able.
It will.
I really hope you're able to do this.
Are you going to join the team or?
What do you want me to do?
Well, I can come up with a couple of things.
All right. Yeah. Give me some stock. I'll join the team. I'm in.
Perfect.
Awesome.
So right. if anybody else wants to join you, right, they just come and apply.
Excellent.
Don't forget your 83B. Got to file that quick.
Okay, good. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, advisor. All right. Enjoy your Hyperloop burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
It's win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.